Dominique Desjarlais from Canada. Can you hear us?
Yes. Okay. Hi, Reiner.
Hi, Dominique.
Hi, everybody. Hi, nice to be here. It's a pleasure to be part of this committee of lawyers on the international level. Thank you, Reiner, for inviting me to participate. I work in Quebec, Montreal, Quebec. So as you know, Canada has 10 provinces. So each of the provinces deal with the situation in their own way, mm-hmm. under their own public health act, whatever they call it in each province. And the federal government decided not to invoke the emergency act. So he lets each provinces deal with their own problem. So I'm dealing with the Quebec government measures, which are pretty much the same as in Ontario. Right now, the situation is the following. We have social contact interdictions that we cannot go to see friends or family in their house, a bit like Francis was explaining. We have a curfew. Depending on the region in the province, it's either from 8 o'clock at night until 5 or 9:30 at night until 5. We also have mandatory masks in all office space for the workers in office space, and mandatory masks in schools for children 6 years old and up all day. There's also a mandatory mask if you go do an outdoor activity with somebody who's not from your household. Let's say you go for some kind of outdoor activity, you need to wear the masks. So it's pretty extreme. The measures we have in Quebec. I've been working since last. Also, as Renata said, talked about, we also have vaccination for the health workers. It's not necessarily mandatory, but it's indirectly mandatory because if the worker refuses to be vaccinated, they have to take 3 PCR tests a week. Okay. And if they refuse to take the 3 PCR tests a week, they need to see if they can be relocated in some other functions or tasks, you know, without contact with the public. And if that's not possible, they have to go home without pay. So in a certain way, it's not mandatory, but it's mandatory because it's coercion. So we are also facing this since a couple of weeks ago that the government imposed on some of the health workers this way to proceed. And the way they did it is that most of the health workers in Quebec are under collective bargaining agreements. So they basically it's the government running the hospitals and the health institution. So they adopted a ministerial order modifying the collective bargaining agreements to impose that process to the health workers. So it makes things a bit complicated to attack because then the health workers have to go through their union. And from what I've heard, some unions, they don't want to hack because, you know, I'm not going to say it's pre-planned, but the information we have is that most of the unions I've heard of from through health workers, they don't want to go ahead with attacking the employer on this issue. But it's been going on for 2 weeks, so it remains to be seen how it will unfold. So that's the kind of measures we have in Quebec. So I've been working for as a lawyer. I'm an independent lawyer. I do civil and commercial litigation. I've been a lawyer for 22 years, and my 22 years have prepared me to deal with this situation because I'm one of the few lawyers in Quebec. I heard Renata talking about the fact that there's a few, approximately 100 lawyers in Italy working on this. Well, in Quebec, I can count the lawyers doing what I'm doing on my left hand. So that's one of the problems we have. We're very few lawyers working on cases like this. And my client, who is a nonprofit organization, has been put in place to protect the rights and liberties of the people. So that's the context in which I'm working right now. So I filed 2 legal recourses so far. I filed a recourse, an habeas corpus application to quash the curfew that we have in Quebec. I filed that in January, and it was answered by the government saying they presented a motion to dismiss, saying that it was not an habeas corpus because curfew could not be considered as detention. It's a bit what you were talking about, Francis, earlier, you know.
But that's weird, isn't it?
So the habeas corpus principle in Canada is pretty wide. It's to assert liberty interests. And I was pretty confident that it would stand as an habeas corpus. So the debate was not on the merits, but on the fact of whether it was an habeas corpus application that could be brought forward for a curfew, or just a judicial review application to review the act of the government. And unfortunately, after hearing arguments, the judge ruled in favor of the government, saying that my application was not an habeas, did not qualify as an habeas corpus, because curfew could not be considered as detention under Canadian law. So it was transformed into a judicial review application, which is a longer process. And as Francis explained, it gives a lot of liberty to the government to justify the measures. Whereas an habeas corpus, as soon as you prove an infringement of your liberty interest, the burden is transferred on the government to justify. That's why I took the habeas corpus route. Unfortunately, the Superior Court judge did not agree. And for strategic reasons, we decided not to appeal, because I want to move forward my judicial review application to as quickly as possible, because the appeal process would take long time, you know. And so I also filed a month and a half ago a lawsuit attacking the root of the problem. So the root of the problem being whether or not there are still circumstances justifying maintaining an health emergency situation under the Public Health Act here in Quebec, where you need to have a grave and imminent and serious threat for the health of the population. So I'm attacking that on the basis of all the studies and the data that has been accumulated over the last year, and the studies that came out recently. Even John Ioannidis said that it's considered as COVID-19 is considered as mild flu. So with 0.14% of lethality or fatality rate. So I'm attacking that. And at the core of my lawsuit, there's the PCR test. Because from the beginning, I saw that the PCR test was a big problem. Because as I've discussed with Twiner and on other occasions, there's proof right now in the Portuguese decision relates it, and the recent Weimar and Austrian decision relates it, that with the cycle of amplification that they run the test by, 97%, the scientific evidence is 97% of the results are false positives. And so I'm attacking that at the root, and I have two experts working very hard on finalizing a report. Actually, they're from Great Britain, Francis. So one of them is Claire Craig. She's a pathologist. And the other one is Tanya Klimenko. She has a PhD in molecular biology. So they're working very hard to. And Claire was one of the 22 researchers who debunked the Corman-Drosten report last year with Michael Eden and all other experts. Mm-hmm. So she's working on my case. I have experts from France and from Switzerland. I have an epidemiologist. I have an infectious disease expert. I have a public health policy expert who used to work for the WHO. And also I'm working on, the lawsuit I filed attacks the root of the problem, so whether or not there's an emergency, health emergency situation that's justified, attacks the PCR test. We also attack the fact that the government is renewing, without going in front of the legislature, the health emergency every 10 days, only by decree, without a debate. So there's no debate in the legislature on the issues. The government just renews the public health emergency every 10 days and imposes the measures with a very close group of 18 people. And they don't necessarily give us all their scientific or so-called scientific evidence that they relate, that they base their decisions on. Well, so some of the Prime Minister and the Public Health Act officer admitted on many occasions that the measures they are imposing, there's no science behind it. no problem or justified science behind it, okay? In press conferences. So that's pretty amazing. However, we're stuck with the same kind of problem. Also my case attacks the constitutionality of the measures and the proportionality test that you talked about, Francis. We have the same under our charter, whether or not the measures are proportional to the aim that they have and what they want to prevent. But the problem that we have in Quebec and in Canada from the decisions I've read so far, the judges on interim injunction hearings, they apply the precautionary principle to the extreme.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the following example. There's a case that was filed in Quebec for an interim injunction for the masking of children. There was so it proceeded on the basis of the file on an interim basis, so an emergency hearing, and the judge acknowledged that there was some harm caused by the mask and that was not really useful. But on the other hand, the government did not present any scientific evidence. And he said, well, first of all, there's a presumption that the measure is adopted in the public's interest. So the other party has to show that the suspension of the measure would be in the public's interest. So the burden is on the plaintiff. Plus, he said, I have the scientific evidence from the plaintiff. But on the other hand, we have a virus. And there's a risk posed by the virus, and as slight as the risk can be, we cannot afford it. So that's an application of the precautionary principle to the extreme.
It's standing it on its head.
Exactly. So that's why I say that we're in some kind of legal maze, okay, where we entered the maze. The door was shut after we entered the maze, but we don't see the exit door, you know? So that's the analogy I make. So we're a kind of situation where we have to scratch our heads as lawyers, try to find a way to bring the issues as effectively as possible before the court. And that's why I'm working very hard with my experts, because when I go to court on some motions or some interim injunction motions, I want to be able to show at least some expert evidence to the court. But to a complete extent, to give the court the best picture possible, not just glimpse of scientific evidence. Because some lawyers in Canada, from what I read, they ran to court quickly without scientific evidence and they were kicked out, you know, pretty quick. So we need to be careful as lawyers to make sure that we present the best case possible and make sure that we don't create bad precedents. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm working very hard with my experts. But as I said, I'm one of the only lawyers doing what I'm doing in Quebec. So I cannot handle all the cases. I also have the mandate to bring an application to cancel the mask mandates for school children and also for adults. So I'm working on many fronts, on many issues, but it's complicated.
Yeah, so we have the advantage now that we're all connected, of being able to exchange these expert opinions and
exactly.
Put the experts in touch with everyone else whenever
exactly.
It's needed.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say, Rana. Being part of this group, I took a lot of notes from what Renata said and what from what Francis said. I think we have mutual interest to share information,
absolutely.
Share legal strategies, you know, just to help each other. You know, for example, if somebody is considering doing something in this country and we have similar legal principles, even if we don't have similar legal principles, the science is the same,
yeah.
And the logic is the same. So we have an advantage to connect to each other. And I thank you very much, Rainer, for putting together this group, because that's the way we're going to get out of this.
Exactly.
If we can share information, share strategies, and share ideas, I think we're going to find a common thread and on what to attack, how to attack it, and to, as Francis said, find the best case possible for a certain issue. Because, you know, your case is as good as your facts. You know, and if you have bad facts, you're going to have a bad case. You're going to have a bad result. Even with good facts and a good case, you can have a bad result,
yeah.
You know, as we've seen.
And you're so right. We have to be careful not to create bad precedents. So we have to
yeah.
be careful to choose our cases. And
yeah,
the courts
and there's
well.
Other lawsuits that were filed in Canada Two major lawsuits were filed in Canada. I know there's one on masks that was filed a couple of days ago. I'm in touch with lawyers in Canada and the U.S., of course, with you, Reiner, also with lawyers in France. So I'm glad to be now in touch with lawyers from Italy and from England and other countries. So let's all work together. It's complicated. It's doable. But we have to put all our efforts together. And I salute all the lawyers who are working on COVID-19 cases right now, because it's a huge task. And when we got into law school, we never imagined that one day we got into such a situation and such a case. Yeah. So I salute you all for all the work that you're doing.
And vice versa, Dominique. Well, thank you very much, Dominique. This is interesting, and we will continue to cooperate, because you're absolutely right. It's the only way to go. We have to have this international legal cooperation, and that'll get us over the last hill that we need to...
And if I can, Reiner, once we find some common thread, that's how we can bring it to the international level. Because if we have enough decisions in each of our countries, we're going to see where the courts are willing to go, and then we can find the flaws in what the other side is doing, and then take that and bring it to the international level.
We will. Thank you, Dominique.
Thank you, Reiner.